Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest DevOps news, AWS announcements, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our Sweet Ops community, plus a live Q&A that you can't find anywhere else. It's September 10th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse sells AWS reference architectures that get you production ready in just 2 weeks. So if you're curious to learn more, go to cloudposse.com. Now, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format's very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like and ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools, like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us live by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Just enter in your email and you'll get an invite for the next event. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, you can go ahead and share with your team. Head over to youtube.com/cloudposse, and there you'll find the recent recording posted in a few hours. So let's get started with the tech news. So here's what caught my attention this week. First was an announcement. I think it happened actually a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago. This is pretty typical, obviously, when there's been a big acquisition like this. The CEO's handcuffs are presumably unlocked, and he's out of there. So I don't think there's anything else behind it other than, hey, that's what I'd be doing. I don't know that it's been announced who's going to step in as CEO after his departure. Another interesting one, ChatGPT feeling the heat, finally adds MCP client support. So right now it's a limited release, only available in the web version of ChatGPT for Pro and Plus teams. But what this means is kind of like the Claude equivalent of ChatGPT. You can now add all your own MCPs directly to ChatGPT, and they give you examples how you can use that. You know, creating calendar events, opening pull requests, closing issues, doing all the standard stuff that you want to do with an MCP, outside of doing it in your editor, where you know there's probably the most value. See, did this get forked again? There we go. So, good and bad news. You know, we've been big fans of Arc. That's the browser that you see me using right now. Arc is pretty awesome because you can organize all your tabs and bookmarks into folders, and these are. It really makes it feel like an operating system based on the web, where you have all of your apps basically here on the side. You have all your profiles along the bottom. And then Arc announced, I don't know what it is now, 6 months ago, that, hey, all, so we decided that Arc was only interesting to power users. And basically, that's not an addressable market that you can make money off of. So we are just going to build the browser for everyone else, an AI-centric browser. For me, that's the one thing I turn off when I use Arc or all the AI features. I don't find them useful. And the announcement was a big, big letdown. And since then, I've been wondering what my replacement was going to be. And I started looking at Vivaldi, started looking at a couple other options. There's a very similar implementation of Arc based on the Firefox engine, but then my browser plugins that I've been using wouldn't work. And I really didn't want to make that switch. So, good news is that the browser company, the company behind Arc, it has been acquired. The bad news is it's by Atlassian. But hopefully they are as big fans of Arc going to keep it going and not make it the next slow ass piece of software like Jira. So good news for all of you using Arc. Now it is a bona fide solution. It's got at least a new lease on life. Any questions on the Arc announcement?
I was curious as to what business reason would there be for Atlassian to acquire Arc or the browser?
I think they go into it a little bit here. I don't recall after reading it. I read it earlier this week. The only thing I remember was that Arc was incredibly popular inside of Atlassian, and the Atlassian engineers were basically saying, "Hey, can you guys just please just buy Arc?" And that's pretty cool when you have that much money. You could just say, "Eh, screw it, we're just going to buy Arc." Now, I'm sure a business has other responsibilities than satisfying their engineers, such as to their investors. So there's got to be another play here with what they're doing. That said, I bet they must have tremendous overlap with the types of users that also would like Arc. It's not a random acquisition in that sense, so I could see it augmenting their portfolio. What is the they bought that video selfie recording company? I forget what it's called.
Zoom, I think.
Loom.
Loom. Yeah, exactly. Zoom would have been an interesting one. But Loom, yes. Loom they did buy. And I'm wondering if this is somehow going to tie into all that.
ClickUp had in tight integration with Loom right before that, and then they cut off Loom and put their own video chat thing in.
Oh, is that was the prequel to what happened?
Right before Atlassian bought Loom, ClickUp had pretty tight integration, and then once Atlassian bought it, they said no more, and then they did their own. Like
Oh, I think
ClickUp
I
did their
remember.
own,
So ClickUp, yeah. So ClickUp is the other popular project management software.
One tool for everything, supposedly. My gripe with ClickUp is that they have a ticket open from 2019 where you can't use the API to create a custom field, which now with agentic stuff, that's like a big slowdown.
I see ClickUp advertised absolutely everywhere. I've never come across one of our customers or anyone else using it, even though it's ginormous, apparently. We're using Linear and really love Linear.
Linear, no custom. Again, you're gonna get me started on custom fields.
No custom fields through the API on Linear.
They really they're pretty opinionated.
Okay.
They're one of the most opinionated
They're the
ticketing
most
systems
opinion.
I've seen. Yeah, Linear. Who's using them? Is it what is it, Rivian? Rivian. Yeah, Rivian uses them.
I forget. Rivian.
The auto thing.
Yeah, I come across it all the time. And surprised to learn that, oh, this company, that company, but I don't have it off the top of my head. All right. Here's a small one. I honestly didn't go too deep into it. I brought it. I shared it only because merge queues has been a frequent topic vis-a-vis Rishav here. We have another post, I think, or video or update to share from the IAC conf from Rishav on that. So arguably, Mergify was one of the first providers of merge queues. We use a lot of Mergify at Cloud Posse and across all of our repos, but we don't use their merge queue solution. Personally, I can't stand their merge queue solution. It requires creating a duplicate PR. So now you have 2x the number of PRs in a repository. They basically create a net new PR with all the changes merged in from main and te run the test that way, and then they manage it. But now that GitHub supports it natively, I don't see much value, even though they will disagree with me on Mergify's merge queues. Anyways, if you're not using merge queues, definitely something to look into, especially if you feel like your merge velocity is not fast enough because you require branches to be up to date. Merge queues exist to solve that problem. So perfect segue into another pitch for you, Rishav.
I was just gonna say on the previous article, oh, this is too cringy for me to look at for the previous one. For the previous article, we were just looking at
Good day,
this.
everyone.
Hold on,
Thank
let me mute
you.
that. Yeah, go on.
We were just looking at it at work, and I was wondering. So the blog article is posted by Mergify. So of course they have an incentive to advertise themselves, their products, their offerings. And I feel like those are sometimes the best kind of folks to do a blog post on because they are incentivized to make it as accurate and comprehensive as possible, while at the same time, the reader knows that they are gonna try and downsell their competitors, and you just have to be aware of that. And as you mentioned, they did mention GitHub merge queues around halfway through, and they say many good things about it. Absolutely true. And then they also mentioned two features specifically, which GitHub merge queues don't have. One of which being you can't prioritize PRs in the queue, and the other being you can't batch merge PRs in the queue. Both of which are incorrect. You can do both of them. You can definitely prioritize PRs if you want to while they're in a queue, and you can also batch them. Albeit you have to do it ahead of time, you have to configure it, but you can set that up. And it's one of the things where I can imagine GitHub Actions, the GitHub merge queues really must have done a number on Mergify and similar businesses who are trying to do the best they can in that space.
Yeah, I mean, it is always a little sad. I feel for companies building popular features on top of a platform only for the platform then to see that and marginalize that feature.
It's always a tricky one. Like on one hand, it's always great. Like, oh, look, we have clearly done a great job. Otherwise, the company wouldn't have absorbed it into their native offering. But also, kind of sucks because that was your whole thing.
Well, I mean that was one of their big things, but that came along much later. I mean, to me, Mergify is mostly about having all the rules that you can configure like we do at Cloud Posse. So having they have a pretty lightweight DSL based in YAML. And let's see, where's that Mergify? So here's our Mergify config, and it's up to 550 lines. And none of this has anything to do with merge queues. So as far as that relates, therefore, a ton of value still for us.
That's quite intense. And is that just for one repository?
So Mergify is cool. I think it has a functionality similar to other Probot-based frameworks where you can have an include from a centralized organizational config. So we have a open source version of this Mergify config. So this applies to all of our repositories. So that's also arguably why it's so large.
So it's a bit like renovate bot in that regards.
It is. Yeah, exactly. In terms of configuration, obviously, the
Yeah,
software
the
is very different.
configuration. I wasn't aware this is really, yeah, this is much more interesting than just the default GitHub merge then.
So this is what I, we use it for a lot of community interaction things. So, in this case, we have a repository that we've more or less archived, but we haven't archived it because we actually want, if we have to make an emergency fix or something, we want the repository around. So what we did was we just created a Mergify rule, for example, to auto-close any PRs that are open with a message saying, hey, this repository has moved. So it doesn't leave people in the dark. That was one interesting use case. Automatically keeping pull requests rebased. So you learn faster when you have merge conflicts. Lots of things about commenting on PRs or closing stale PRs. If something's conflicted but nobody's pushed anything to it for a couple of weeks, then hey, just close it. At this point, that person's moved on, and we can always reopen it. So this is how
Stale issues.
exactly stay on top of all the pull requests that we get.
Oh, very neat, actually.
Cool.
I
And
take it.
we had talked about Rishab's work on using merge queues with OpenTofu specifically. His talk was a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago. So if you're interested in that, that's been published now by the IACConf. IACConf being run by Spacelift, big backers of OpenTofu. Then Michael shared this. This was an exciting announcement. As everybody running Atlantis is freaking out right now, they got to make sure this is disabled. You can now exec into EKS tasks the same way you can exec into like Kubernetes pods. But the interesting nuance here is that in order to exec into a Kubernetes pod, you need to have API access to the cluster, and that cluster is presumably deployed in a VPC. I'm reading between the lines here, and I'm just guessing because this is an API functionality of AWS. I'm guessing, therefore, that you can, if you have CLI access to that particular capability, and IAM permissions, you can exec into a task. So unless you have specific blocks preventing that behavior, from say, I don't know if you can restrict it, for example, to network blocks or other what other options there are other than IAM. But one of the challenges here is that, like, if you're running Atlantis in a task, that is a god task. It has, IAM permissions to do pretty much anything because you need pretty much anything to do Terraform. That's a major risk.
Yeah, I share this one. This was kind of interesting. I mean, the big thing for this one is it's available from the console. Some time ago, well, back in the early days of ECS, you couldn't really do anything with your task. It was kind of a lot of hurdles you had to jump over. But then from the CLI, you could exec into a
Oh, okay,
task.
got it.
Yeah, you could
You could
but
always do it through the CLI. Got
yeah,
it.
and it's all IAM controlled indeed, and you could put your whatever sort of controls you want to put on there. But the difficult part was you had to find the cluster, you had to find the service, you had to find the task within the service, and then you could actually execute the command to exec into the task. So now I guess it's a little bit easier. I haven't actually tried it yet because all my scripts just do it from the CLI. And oddly enough, I had one that was like YOLO. It was called literally called YOLO because I never knew what task. It just randomly picked the task and it's just like, hey, connect me to it, especially if it's a service that's running like three or four same tasks, just different copies of it or whatever. Then I didn't really care. I just needed to check something. But if you really need to dial into one specific task, it's probably easier from the console because you can see all your running tasks. Maybe you could see the one that has the problem that's happening, and then you could just attach to that one, exec into it, and do what you got to do. From the CLI, it's a little bit more ambiguous because you kind of have to figure out which one is which. So I would just YOLO into the service and just pick one. But this simplifies that. At least I hope it simplifies that by giving you access from the console.
All right. Well, thanks for setting the record straight and giving the use case I could see. Now that you say it, I remember when the console access for ECS tasks came out, there were a number of little utilities that came out that made like selecting that a lot easier. I remember now. So yeah, I understand now that this is
Yeah.
for the console. What was dev.conf packages? I realized that would be something interesting for us to look at again. Oh, I thought we had one in. All right. Well, thanks for sharing that one, Mike. Last announcement that I saw, actually it was a couple or a few weeks ago. I thought it was interesting. The Kubernetes project itself, with Thakin being one of the core contributors or top 1% here in Reddit, but also a core maintainer of Kubernetes, originally from Google, that they are actually reaching out, hey, everyone. Please help us test the alpha releases or the pre-releases of Kubernetes. It really sucks to make a big release only to find out that it breaks something for some people, and not enough people are basically testing the alpha releases or the pre-releases, so they don't actually learn what they need to learn until it's too late. I found this a cathartic comment. We maintain Atmos, and sometimes everything works fine for us. What we do, how we use it for all of our customers. But there's a lot of people who use it not the way we use it or intended to use it. And that's not wrong. It's just nothing we test. So having that early feedback is really nice. And I'm curious what came of this comment. All right, Michael, anything else interesting this week?
Not necessarily. I got questions for Q&A, but I'll hold on till then.
Cool. Rika?
I was just going to say, these things are so tricky, like getting early feedback, testing your alpha beta releases. And more often than not, people are just so too scared to use any realistic loads. It's just hard to kind of get through this. I guess how would you solve it? I guess just have a lot of automation in place, try to account for the edge cases, that sort of thing. That's
Yeah.
hard. Yeah. What else could you do, I guess?
I know what didn't work for us. We asked everyone, hey, since there's so many crazy ways people are using Atmos, if you guys could share like a cleaned version of your Atmos configurations with us, that'll help us build more rigorous tests for all the different scenarios and things you're doing. But it was crickets on that. I guess we could ask again. But yeah, I think it's well, taking one step back and just getting nerd sniped by the question, what there is a database that was designed from the ground up to be distributed and fault tolerant, where they built it with 100% test coverage and statement coverage. And it made it one of the most reliable databases out there. The name is escaping me right now, and I think they were just acquired. Anyone know what database I was referring to?
It's not going to be Databricks, is it? No, it's going to be Supabase? No.
No, I don't think it was that one.
Is it a Postgres derivative?
I believe it might have spoken the Postgres wire protocol, but it was built from the ground up. Yeah, it's escaping me at the moment. Maybe it'll me, but what was interesting about it were these really hard problems in distributed systems. They didn't have them because they had solved it through the entire process building it. So they had tests for absolutely every single thing, and it made it incredibly reliable and performant at the same time. But I guess my point now. That's a lot harder to do retroactively to any project, especially any project at the scale of Kubernetes. But that's an interesting idea, right? Where you actually have, well, then I guess it's off by one. Then you got to make sure that your tests are testing what you intend. But if your tests aren't testing what you intend and you have 100% coverage, then I suppose there are no bugs. Yeah. All right, Michael, you want to share? Oh, I think it was called FoundationDB. Was that it? FoundationDB testing. Yeah, anyways, what I was paraphrasing, I believe, is FoundationDB. Hopefully, I got it right. But it was interesting. When I learned about it. All right, Michael, what was your question?
Oh, if you're in Q&A, I'll wait until then. Otherwise, yeah, I can share my question now if that's appropriate. So I'm helping somebody on a project that it's a monorepo. It's got a lot of developers, lot of long-lived branches, and they're having a lot of conflicts as they merge, from one branch to the other, merging back into the mainline branch to run tests and everything. So I'm just trying to like give them best practices to minimize merge conflicts. And really, I just kind of wanted to bounce off the congregations, like, what are some practices you're using to minimize conflicts on similar repos? I'm looking at like the Git attributes file. There was one feature that I hadn't heard of. It's like the Git re, which is like it helps it remember previous refactors or previous merge conflict resolutions.
Huh. What re is what?
Yeah, exactly. That's the same thing that I said. I'll see if I can find the
Re
command
what?
to add it. Yeah. But so those are like a couple things that I came across right out of the gate. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to see what other folks were using to minimize merge conflicts.
I think anecdotally, what has helped us, and we are by far, immune from it. I think it's improved as we have adopted this. And this, what I'm going to share is an example for Go. Similar things will exist for other languages. But what we've done is enforce much smaller files with much smaller functions, which mu with much less complexity per function. So that means that the logic is more distributed, and hopefully the impact of making changes to the code is impacting a simpler piece of code, and that simpler piece of code is easier to merge. Now, if multiple teams are working on the same exact lines of code consistently, therein the problem, and that's probably more procedural than anything else. Than working on concurrent features affecting the same code. Anyone disagree or agree or have other ideas?
I can't agree or disagree, but I can say we had this GitHub Action workflow that run on a schedule that doing a rebase on all open PRs. That way you make your feature branch at least sync with main, but it's not the best thing to do, but yeah, it's something. Other thing we keep in mind, we use like short-lived, very specific feature branch.
That's true. That's a big one.
Yeah, and the rebase like schedule make it easy also. So these are my two points. Yeah.
Bringing it full circle, then going back to Mergify, this is one of those things Mergify can help with. Rather than making it time-based, make it the number of commits behind main, and that's configurable, of course. So this will automatic Mergify can automatically rebase your pull requests.
All right, and this will be my naivete for looking at an Atmos config. I believe this is Atmos.
No, this is Mergify.
Mergify. Okay, I'm sorry. But Atmos can run Mergify.
Well, Mergify is a GitHub app that you install in, oh yeah, you're not using GitHub.
Well, I
It
mean,
is a CLI as well. I'm not sure if it's a CLI.
yeah, for this particular project, they are not using GitHub. But I wonder if like a Docker version of it could be applied.
Yeah. Well, and also, what platform do they use?
They're on Bitbucket pipelines.
Let's see if Mergify supports Bitbucket.
And the cool thing with Bitbucket though is you could pretty much, if it's a container, you can they have their concept of actions are called pipes. And basically pipes are specifically wrapped container. Instances. So if there's anything that can run in a container, you can sort of wrap it in the Bitbucket shell or cellophane, whatever you want to call it, so that it can run in a pipelines workflow.
So that's very similar to GitHub Actions, how you can have container steps
Yeah.
that run in a container. I'm not sure conclusively if it supports it. There's SEO content at least written for it, but I don't think they support it. So yeah, some container-like solution probably.
Yeah, well, no, I can take a look at it.
Interesting, they don't say that Mergify doesn't work with it. I have a question for everyone before I go this scripting route or something else. CodeRabbit, we've been using it for a long time. CodeRabbit is AI-based code review. And I feel like it's just gotten better and better and better, especially at the languages that we are predominantly using other than Terraform. We are not subjecting anybody to it right now in Terraform, but we are using it for our all of our like Next.js React projects, as well as Atmos, for example, and so forth. The challenge that I find with the feedback that you get with it is feeding that back into your agentic editor and having it propose the fix or just or eval or consider it invalid, which the editors can do as well. And right now I've just been copying those back and forth from Mergify. So like if we go to github.com Cloud Posse Atmos, and we look at a pull request like this upcoming Atmos auth implementation. Oh, this, yeah. So here, for example, it's identified an issue, and then it has a prompt that you can send to your editor. Anybody else using CodeRabbit like this? Anybody else seen any tooling to make that easier? I was kind of hoping there was a CodeRabbit MCP or CodeRabbit CLI that I could just query GitHub and get the CodeRabbit comments out of before scripting, reading GitHub issue comments and extracting it.
I can add some information to this. So we used CodeRabbit in the past, but we switched it to Anthropic Cloud. So developers using Cloud Code locally, and Cloud is integrated as application with the GitHub. And then the trick here is that we use GitHub MCP, and then with the Cloud Code, we ask him to pull the comments from PRs, whether it's from cloud itself or from senior engineers, and then it's gonna have the context it need and then fix it locally and even push it back with a nice commit message, I guess. So that's how we do it.
That sounds interesting. And that's the other problem I didn't mention, but you remind me. Then when you fix these things, saying what you did to fix it and resolving the comments, so you have a history of that. Because otherwise you go through trying to figure out, well, was this fixed? This addressed? And that's been annoying. So I've been really curious about the code review feature in Claude Code. Are you saying you're liking it better than what you had?
Yeah, exactly. Because we have cloud.md files that the source of truth of everything we need, like linting, formatting, all the test cases, everything, as you know, so it doesn't lose context, you know. So that MD file is aware locally and in the BR. That's also another trick we do. Yeah.
That's interesting. You said something else I wanted to follow up on, but I forgot. It'll hit me later. Was somebody else raising their hand or going to say something?
No, not a question, and only if there is spare time. I am very late to this, but I only just heard about Digger HQ or Digger.dev, which looks like a GitHub Action-based workflow for helping you provision Terraform, OpenTofu. To me, it looks like a like-for-like replacement for Atlantis, but using GitHub Actions instead. Has anyone come across this before? Have you seen this before?
No, absolutely. I mean, they're very vocal. They're very, I guess, because I follow them on LinkedIn. But there's kind of the taco mafia, if you will, and that's obviously the OG Spacelift. There's Terra Team, Terra Mate, Digger.
In those cases, I kind of thought that those guys were focused on the Terraform CLI binary side of things. Like they're more focused on making the CLI do things.
No. They're more on the other side of it.
Like pipelines and workflows.
Yeah, they're more about automating continuous delivery of Terraform.
Gotcha. Oh, right. Yeah, okay. And Digger is on the same board.
And Digger is in the same, yeah, in the same boat there.
Gotcha.
There's also, yeah, and yeah, there's more that I see coming out feeling, it seems like almost weekly, but definitely every month there's a new alternative. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was a bit curious. I was reading up on this as well and looking at seed round. That's always exciting. And I remember in one of their marketing materials, I think I saw something about this being cross-platform across GitHub, GitLab, which sounds great. And then I was reading the docs, and it's very clearly we only support GitHub at the moment. We will support the other platforms eventually. It's like, okay, what are we
The
doing here?
challenge is that the other platforms just don't.